Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
I was just at our P.O. box, Ben, and I approached the desk saying, I am Adam Pranica, and I have a very embarrassing P.O. box here. And the person behind the counter said, I have packages for you. And so, Ben, I have packages for us. What do you say we tear into them?
I've always admired your package, Adam. Let's see what's inside.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Packages of so many shapes and sizes, Ben. A package for any comer, I think. We're going to start with the littlest package. This one comes from our friend Samantha from Drumheller, Alberta.
Cool.
Here's what the letter says. Dear Ben and Adam, I thought it was time for you to each have your own ankylosaurs. All right, I'm opening what's in this box now. Wow! And true... true to Samantha's word, what we have here are two very lifelike-looking ankylosaurs.
I just looked up Drumheller on Google Maps, and the photo associated with the town is of, like, a giant stucco Tyrannosaurus Rex on the roadside.
Wow.
This looks like a dino-rich part of the world.
Letter continues, fun fact, there are two different types of ankylosaurs. Some have tail clubs, while others have shoulder spikes. Not sure if this is part of Star Trek canon. Thanks for so many hours of hilarious and insightful pod. You won't believe me, but I feel smarter for having listened. I don't believe you, Samantha. You are full of crap. Plus, my nuck awareness has increased. See that, I believe.
Yeah, we do tend to point out the nuck.
Letter continues, this is my first watch through of DS9, and I might have never watched it without the Greatest Gen as a companion.
Wow.
Seeing you in Edmonton for Greatest Gen Con was a delight.
Hey.
From your faithful viewer, Samantha. And it says PS here, shout out to my fellow Greatest Gen pal, Robbie.
Cool.
So there you have it. Two awesome ankylosaurs. Ben, I'm going to Jackie and Laura you pictures of them.
Hard to imagine those won't be coming out on tour with us, right?
You'll have to tell me which one you are. Are you spiky guy or are you hammer tail?
Do you think that the hammer tail goes in trills with spots and the spiky one goes in trills with loafs?
Yeah, that is exactly what I think.
Because that first trill you ever meet is a loaf trill.
The thing about the spiky back ankylosaur is that the spikes are shaped like a fish hook in that thing's going into the pouch, but it ain't coming out.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying?
It'll sink the hook?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, so that, I think that's probably an entrance only into that pouch.
The club tail one is definitely more erect looking.
Yeah, I agree. Lot to like about the spiky guy, though.
Yeah, he's got a lot of charm.
Ben, our second package comes from Ryan from Washington, D.C.
Our nation's capital.
Oh, there's an envelope in here. You know what I love? There's one envelope in here with Ben and Adam written on it. Uh-huh. And then there's a second envelope with a post-it note on it that says, extra envelope.
Is that in case we want to send the letter back?
Yeah. All right. I'm opening the card. The card is covered with Star Trek ships.
Cool.
There's a letter inside.
I like Star Trek ships.
Letter says, Dear Ben and Adam, I recently fell down a space butthole of collecting Star Trek starship models I found online.
Wow.
When confronted with the many different types of models there are available, I was amazed at how many terrible model designs there are. There are some real doozies out there, so I thought I would send two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast two terrible models.
Wow.
You would be a bit embarrassed to have on your desk. It's a thank you gift for all the great Trek pod you've shared with the world. So check it out. Ryan has sent us two ships out of the Star Trek official starships collection.
Wow.
And he is not wrong. These are some ugly ass ships. One of them is the USS Firebrand. This is a Freedom class ship. It's just got a single warp nacelle connected to a saucer. And it looks like one of the dumbest things that Ryan has ever seen. It's only seen on screen very briefly in the graveyard aftermath of Wolf 359. Yeah. I mean, if I'm the Borgs at Wolf 359, I'm not feeling very great about putting this one out of its misery.
It seems like it would be really hard to steer the Firebrand.
Right. Yeah, it's like a surfboard without a fin on it.
Yeah.
The second one is the USS Curry. Not surprisingly, the Curry class starship. It's a Hood Excelsior model converted to Del Sol form with USS Reliant nacelles, and it looks terrible. And in looking at it, I am inclined to agree, Ryan. This is a terrible looking starship.
It looks like a starship that somebody dropped down the stairs and then didn't quite know how to put back together.
You know what's great about the model that he sent is that one of the nacelles has fallen off and it's sort of loosely rattling around the box that Ryan sent it to us in. I will send you pictures of these also, Ben.
The USS Curry really looks like the kind of ship that's designed to make a water landing.
Yeah.
It's got like Spruce Goose vibes to it.
It really does. That's a great call. Well, our thanks to Ryan for those really thoughtful and terrifically ugly starship gifts.
Yeah, thank you. They can't all be as iconic as the Entrepreneur.
That's true. Third and final package, Ben. It is the biggest. I'm saving the biggest for last, which is not something I've ever said out loud.
Hopefully this is the bucket that I ordered.
It is from Lieutenant Ney and Old Ike from Oakland, California.
Hey, that's my hometown.
You know, I asked the mayor of Oakland about you, and they said they never heard of you before.
Well, I kept a pretty low profile when I lived there because I was a child.
There is a terrific amount of newsprint in this. It's going to take a moment for me
to
dig through.
Is this one of those joke gifts where it's a huge box and then there's like a engagement ring in the middle?
All right. That was like a leg lamp amount of packing material in that giant box. What I found inside is a Star Trek The Next Generation Monopoly game. Collector's Edition. Whoa, it's got a bunch of space bucks in it. Looks like it's got latinum. Strips of latinum. It's got all the game pieces in here.
Wow, cool. What is it? A thimble, a starship, a old-timey top hat?
So I'm looking at where Park Place and Boardwalk would be. There is the Borg and Q. There are four shuttlecrafts where the railroads would be. You know, stuff like that. We've got replicators and Temerians and
lore. But what are the game pieces, Adam?
I found a game piece. Looks like Data with a tricorder is one of them.
Oh. A little pewter Data?
All the pieces have been just thrown around.
I kind of get the sense that this is not new in box. This is like a...
No, this is very, very used. All right, so I've got the game pieces, and we've got a little pewter Data holding a tricorder. We got a pewter Geordi holding what looks like a pad. We've got pewter Worf holding a phaser. The gang's all here. We got Pewter.
That's great.
We've got Pewter Troy holding her breasts just because she has her arms crossed. Pewter Wesley, also arms crossed. Pewter Picard doing the make it so sign.
That's fun.
Pewter Riker and Pewter Beverly. The gang's all here.
Wow.
You know what no one would like to hear us do, Ben?
Play that game.
Letter inside goes like this. Dear Ben and Adam, do you remember the couple from the Priority One in the Greatest Disco episode, season 2, episode 7?
Vividly, vividly.
Where one half has stopped listening to The Greatest Gen and is patiently waiting for The Way of the Warrior for the other to catch up so they can listen together.
Oh, wow.
It is us. We found some good Trek stuff at Ike's parents' house recently, and we also found this. So to thank you for bringing us the greatest podcast, we have decided to send you the worst game.
Wow, it's the worst game?
We would suggest you use it as a negative space on Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets, but playing Monopoly, even for one episode, even with beverages, even with a Trek theme, seems too cruel a punishment for two people we love so much. See, you guys get it, Nay and Ike. Do with it what you must. And then in parentheses, it says, at least check out the bills before you toss it in the matter reclamation unit.
This game gets a 4.6 out of 10 on BoardGameGeek.com.
We'll see you when you make it back to the Bay Area, and we can't wait to spend Picard and Lower Decks with you as well. You have beer. You have beer, and always will be our greatest pod. That's fun. From Nay and Ike, another great haul from the P.O. box today, Ben.
Yeah, thank you to everybody who sent stuff in.
Grateful for our viewers' generosity and for thinking of us.
You know, we have that other board game, the How to Host a Mystery Dinner Party with Friends board game set. Got that over here.
You know what? There was something else in this package that I didn't open that I realized I need to. It's totally bubble wrap mummified. Oh my god. All right, Ben. Inside some bubble wrap along with the Monopoly game board, I have unwrapped a ceramic handmade, and I need to emphasize this, handmade piece of ceramic pottery. It looks profoundly vaginal. I'm going to send you a picture and then I'm going to read the letter. Letter goes like this. Dear Ben and Adam, this is Isaac's mom. I am in Wisconsin, sending you this gift from Nay and Ike, because that's what mothers do. Ike came home to collect some of his stuff, because his parents are moving abroad and renting their house.
This just happened to me. My parents moved abroad and rented out their house.
They should be friends, right?
Yeah.
Clearing stuff out, I found this old ST wall sconce he made me. He will be very unhappy with his mother if or when he finds out I bequeathed it to the two of you. I am deeply grateful for the assistance ST gave us in helping us raise an upstanding citizen of the universe. Live long and prosper, Ike's mom.
Wow.
Okay.
Epic mom troll.
There's a photo in here. P.S. The photo is from around 1997 when Ike was in around fourth grade. He'll kill me if he finds out I sent this along. Ben, I'm looking at this now for the first time. Oh, boy. I am now sending you this picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's a lot to take in there.
That's a wall sconce that you're meant to put a candle in, I take it.
You've never seen a candle look like this. It has what is generously described as a UFP logo on the back.
Yeah.
And then for some reason the stamp for nuclear stuff.
Oh really?
You know that logo.
Nuclear candle.
Yeah.
Isaac, you may be feeling feelings of embarrassment. You may be feeling feelings of betrayal, but here's the thing. You were raised with a mom that had you in an acceptable haircut. You know?
That is true.
Me at this age, I had a terrible haircut, and the picture would be much, much, much more embarrassing. So, you know, I think count your blessings, bud.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're doing all right over there, Ike. Yeah. And Ike's mom. Wow.
Got a lovely lady friend. You're doing great.
I think Ike and his mom need like I'm getting the sense that they're quarreling with each other. Like she did this to embarrass him.
I know. I fucking love her.
Wow. Thank you. Friend of DeSoto, Ike's mom.
Yeah.
And thanks to everyone who sent something in today. That was really cool to see what you had in store for us.
You know what else is cool? A nice breeze off of the lake on planet Ryza.
Adam, one of the best places.
It's a very chill hang. You want to go there? Do you want to go to there with me?
Who could possibly hate Ryza? Maybe only he who is without sin, Ben. Let's talk about Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 7. Let He Who Is Without Sin.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Start with Morn delivering a flower to a lady. Very strange shot.
He's seducing a woman who also has liver spots.
She's an older Starfleet.
Yeah.
It seems like she doesn't know him or know what is going on until the flower is in her hand. Like the way, like I was watching her face for like signs of recognition or knowing what was going on. And she just looks profoundly confused until she's got the flower and then she's in love with him.
It looks like a moment that's been very directed, the kind that you would get in a commercial from a chamber of commerce,
right,
for a vacation town, you know?
Yeah, like, visit Deep Space Nine.
These things don't happen in real life.
No.
Come to Deep Space Nine and be seduced by Morn.
It's like those like super ironic come visit Cleveland YouTube videos.
I'm not going to say anything bad about Cleveland.
I like Cleveland. I'm referencing specific videos that are making fun of it.
If Morn was in Cleveland, we'd be touring there every year.
So then we get Sisko and Odo catching a morning hang.
What do you think of the O'Brien's plan to name their baby Sean?
And Dax comes and joins them, and she is, in the parlance of our times, toe up.
But girl,
is that what it means to have sex injuries?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, she's got sex injuries. Mention is made that Worf is spending a lot of time in the infirmary as well. They are in the violent honeymoon period of their relationship.
Yeah, when you have new love, Ben, often you'll go past the point that's safe, and you will have to, and you will be sex injured. Ben, have you had a sex injury?
I don't believe I've ever had a sex injury. Not a neck-based one, certainly.
Ben, I once got a hand job so lacking lubrication that I got a blister on the shaft of my dick.
Whoa.
Which, believe me, the shaft can blister, and it did. It put me out of commission for quite a while.
Wow.
If it were possible to friction blister my dick, I thought I would have known about it by then. But this is a totally new thing to happen to me, and it was with a partner.
You thought you would have discovered that in private.
Yeah, exactly. So I was blown away when this happened.
Wow. Don't be afraid to get a little spit involved.
Or anything, really. Anything would have helped. I should have spoken up.
Yeah.
So that's partly my mistake, too.
Worf and Dax have a vacation planned. I think Sisko had been told that they were going to Earth, but in fact, they're going to be going to Ryza.
Yeah, Earth is boring.
All they got is Creole food.
You can't have tons of anonymous sex on Earth. It's not that kind of paradise.
No. I mean, it is paradise, though, right?
Right. Worf is not enjoying his shit being put out into the streets by Dax. Yeah. And Dax is making the case that your friends aren't the streets.
Right. I mean, I think that it's kind of a surprising... It's a surprising place for Worf to be coming from, being that he previously was stationed on a ship with 1,000 people and is now on a station with like four times that many people.
Right.
This is a very cosmopolitan place by comparison, and is going to have, you know, like we've talked about Deep Space Nine being a small town, but it's way less small of a town than the Entrepreneur.
Worf seems like he's feeling like after leaving his friends on the Entrepreneur that he doesn't want any more friends.
Yeah.
And he is neglectful of the ones that he has here.
Worf is in a really bad way and emotionally, and I think this is an episode that is largely about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that from a position of great empathy. Empathy was a hard feeling for me to muster throughout this ep for Worf.
Yeah, I mean,
specifically,
being in a bad way emotionally is not a good excuse to act like shit to your friends. Yeah,
that's fair. So Worf is also upset because Worf saw Dax having lunch with an ex.
I do not trust Captain Baudet.
And Worf is thinking that this ex might still have a candle lit for her in some way. Their mere sharing of a meal seems to cross some kind of line for him.
Yeah, and this is another mention of that transparent skull guy.
Yeah.
We've heard about him.
We've heard, but we have not seen, and I can't wait to see that guy's brains.
They gotta show him.
Yeah.
Gotta take a look at those brains.
Yeah.
Well, I can see it's going to be quite a trip.
This is a conversation that feels like it's full of a bunch of triage because, like, fires are starting up and then they're getting put out, and then another fire gets lit before the end of the scene, and that is Bashir and Lita want to hitch a ride to Risa with them.
Yeah, we're coming on your romantic getaway is not... Not the friendliest thing to spring on a couple of ostensibly close friends.
But they're aware of the size of the runabout and yeah, its ample rear section. And they also make promises about not spending a lot of time with them. They're just right in it for the ride.
We just happen to get the same flight. We're not going to be in your hotel room the entire time.
Exactly.
That's exactly the promise.
So they calibrate their expectations for that, but on their way to the ship... they bump into, at the airlock, a Quark who has his bags packed as well and will be joining them for the journey.
That's a terrible kind of boss, right? The boss that lets you go on vacation but then comes with.
Yeah, that's not good. That would be horrifying. Especially when you're going to a sex planet.
Yeah.
You can't really be yourself on a sex planet if your boss is there too.
Yeah. I've always said that.
So they have got a pretty full runabout, Ben.
Yeah.
And
this is the rare runabout trip to Risa that does not encounter any Romulans or Borgs or anything.
No. No, and it's exciting. Like, I see, like, look, we know Worf and to a certain extent Dax are not happy to have interlopers with them on this trip, but, like, vacationing with friends is fun.
Yeah.
And seeing them all together, it's sort of in that pre-funk portion of a vacation is neat, and the spirits, at least accepting for Worf, seem to be pretty high.
Yeah, Dax is taking this with a ton of grace that Worf is not,
and no.
Worf is pissed even to be getting handed a beverage by Lita.
Coming about, setting course for Deep Space Nine.
The presence of Quark is never going to make Worf happy. Quark talks about his cabin on the runabout?
Yeah.
You call that a cabin? It's a cot and a waste disposal unit.
That's not a thing.
Maybe they have different donkeys. Like some runabouts have a big wide open space back there. Others have a donkey full of cabins.
I wish we got to see in the back of that runabout.
Just want to see in the back.
If you got a big, let me search it.
Just grab either side of the runabout and pull it open. Let me see the inside of it.
Yeah, spread that shit.
This, Quark is distributing Horgons. Lita's giving out drinks. Everyone's stoked.
They explain the Horgon mechanic here
uh-huh.
in a way just to kind of like catch you up if you didn't watch every episode of TNG.
Useful.
Yeah. It's kind of like Commander Riker explaining time travel.
It's a sign of things to come, though, because Worf can't loosen up here, and his two sticks in the mud will remain
for the rest of the episode. He is not given a Horgon.
No, he's not. You think that's what set him off? Quark didn't even give him a Horgon.
He was already set off.
Yeah. You never want to be with or be the person where other people in the group are asking, is he okay? I've been that guy before.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I was that guy on the big group trip to Mexico for your birthday. Yeah. But that was because I was like legitimately sick.
Right. You were.
Bumming everybody out.
You were diarrhea in the mud. You weren't. You weren't stick in the mud.
Yeah, making my own mud.
Making mud pies.
Gul Dukat.
So on the surface, they meet Arandis, who is played by Vanessa Williams. This is a Vanessa Williams that predates the L that she would put into her name later on in her career. Miss America Vanessa Williams.
Yeah. I would never have guessed that Rene Aubergenois had directed Vanessa Williams.
What a thrill. What I read was that she was so game to be in DS9 that like her first day on set was her first shooting day. Like she took the red eye out, they costumed her up, and she was on set like immediately, like ready to go. Like real professional, awesome person, Vanessa Williams.
She breaks some pretty amazing news in this scene, which is that Curzon Dax died from Jemma Haron.
It's the way that Kirk always wanted to go out, but couldn't.
Kirk slipped down a rock face and got crushed under a bridge.
I know.
I mean, he said it was fun. Imagine what he would have said if he died from Jemma Haron.
You know, Kirk wanted to die from being crushed under some wharf. Drowned in wharf.
Yeah. That's his kink, right? After what they did to his boy.
Yeah.
This character is the one who done it. She was Jemma Haroning Curzon when he passed, apparently.
We had a wonderful time together.
Worf is doing that thing that, you know, when you date a person seriously, the expectation that they were brand new for you is something that you really need to leave behind. Like, people have histories and pasts and other people that they've been with. And this idea that Worf is hurt by Dax having a sex life with someone else, even if that sex life is with someone that they're sharing a time and place with, is not really cool, Worf.
Yeah,
he should be upset that Arandis killed her. Or him back when it was when it was Curzon. You know what I mean? Like, he should be kinda upset at murder.
Like, it really gives you a sense of how DTF Dax is, that no grudge is held there.
Murdered by that puss, the Curzon Dax story.
Yeah, there is a definite pattern of controlling behavior emerging with Worf. He doesn't like that Dax was hanging out with the Gallimite. Now he doesn't like that she's friendly with this lover of a previous incarnation.
Right.
He is really salty about it in a way that is super uncool.
That is a mistake.
This conflict is going to continue throughout the episode, this tension between free spirit Dax and controlling Worf. Kind of makes you wonder, like, besides all of their sex injuries, what they could possibly have in each other.
Yeah, I think that the case has not really been made that well, why Dax likes Worf.
It's a little weak at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy to see what he likes about her. She's fun. She's got that sarong that she takes off at opportune moments.
Often you'll see this in couples where, like, one is the looser upper of the other. And that's what Dax is in this relationship. She makes him better.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's true in my relationship. My wife is definitely much more fun and good than me.
Same. Does a Klingon swimsuit have two mesh nets? Because we get to see the Klingon swimsuit that Worf pulls out of his luggage. Also, we never see his luggage.
Yeah.
which I also wanted to see.
He never puts the swimsuit on.
Yeah.
And I think that would have really elucidated a lot. We could have seen the dual package situation.
Those double pipes.
That would have been fun.
You know, a Klingon swimsuit is known as like carpenter jeans, right? Because you got to carry around those hammers.
Oh yeah. So instead of a mesh inner, it's got just two hammer loops.
Right.
In there.
Yeah.
While Worf is examining his swimsuit, he gets paid a visit by Pascal Fullerton, who is like the platonic ideal of an old time TV actor, I feel like.
I thought he was Lee Majors at first. He's really got that Lee Majors look.
He's got Major That Guy vibes, and he's been in a ton of shit. He's like one of those actors that has a career that spans like the 70s and into the teens.
Oh, you know what? He was on the $6 Million Man as the recurring role of the $7 Million Man.
Ugh,
Steve Austin's more powerful and amorally renegade successor. That is great.
We spent $1 million more dollars to make him worse.
I would consider myself the more amorally renegade host of Greatest Gen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. That's fucked up, dude.
I know. Watch out.
This guy is the leader of the New Essentialist Movement.
I'm not familiar with that organization.
Which are the conservative scolds of the Federation. And he gives Worf like a trifold pamphlet of some of the tenets of their belief system. And they really play right into his control freak tendencies.
They really do. This Fullerton is going to be a problem. His evangelism is coming at the perfect time for Worf, who appears to be flailing for any reason to not participate in this trip in any way. And with Fullerton, he has sort of a foothold.
You're going to buy a timeshare in Mexico?
We don't have to buy. We can stay for free. And all we have to do is listen to a 20-minute information session.
Dax and Worf are shown walking around in, you know, these shimmering spa rooms where everybody's in swimsuits and giving each other massages. And Worf is just like head in the book reading about Fullerton's stupid ideas.
Kind of a buzzkill.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my little state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
They walk in on Lita, who is getting an air massage. And this is clearly like a sexier massage than a no contact massage would imply.
Sure. Yeah, there's a Rysian beefcake there.
Yeah.
Giving it to her.
He's in one of those shirts that is totally see-through.
Yeah.
So you can see all the nice hunky muscle under it.
Care to join us?
Worf is not feeling good about what he's walked into. And Dax is great. She's like, it's none of their business what they're doing.
Like, Worf walks into a room where Lita's got her robe nearly falling off of her breasts, and instead of staring at that, he's staring at the dude because he's mad at the dude for being there with Lita and not being Dr. Bashir.
Worf is a fucking hypocrite. I'm gonna say it now, and I'm gonna say it throughout the episode. Like, he wants his beliefs respected, and he wants his business kept out of, but he can't help but stick his nose into everyone else's. Give me a break, Worf.
Give me a fucking break.
He's responding to Fullerton's screed about this need to return to Federation morals. But what does Worf care about Federation morals? Like, he comes from a violent society that subjugates women, and he gets into fights to the death all the time that are like under the cover of his own cultural foundation. He's a total hypocrite about this, and the only reason he's entertaining the idea of Fullerton's proselytizing is because he doesn't want to participate in the vacation.
Perhaps you underestimate the power of Fullerton's message.
Speaking of that proselytizing, Worf actually goes to this guy's rally where he and all of his dour acolytes come out in, like, you know, they're all in like robes and all the colors are muted. A lot of grays and blacks and browns.
They're leaving everything to the imagination.
I would not call it a show.
And they speak to the assembled group of bikini-clad onlookers.
Yeah.
And,
he's there to sell them a timeshare opportunity if they just have 3 or 4 hours.
An attractive man like yourself.
Oh, bye!
And what he's saying is, like, you're acting like babies.
If you're like me, your wife would tan your hide if you thought for yourself.
You have every need serviced. You never take issues of security seriously.
I'm barely even a man. My wife chases me around with a rolling pin.
And, this is really throwing meat to Worf, who is always writing for people aren't taking security seriously enough. But yeah, like, he's saying that, like, unless the Federation changes its ways, it's going to be crushed by one of these marauding alien societies, and cites the Borgs, the Klingons, and the Jem'Hadar as examples of potential threats that the Federation is not prepared to handle.
We don't know anything about Fullerton's past, right? Like, all we have is him fully formed, this middle-aged man giving this condescending speech.
Yeah.
And it's like the modern baby boomer argument. Like, he made it to middle age getting his, and he's shutting the door behind him
right
now that he's getting old. But it would be so much more interesting if he was, I don't know, the veteran of some Starfleet war, or he had seen some shit somewhere that made him think this way. Like, it wouldn't make his argument correct, but it would give
him would understand where he was coming from.
Yeah, he is acting without any motivation at all besides his message, and I think that hurts the episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are a lot of conservative stripes of thought, like when you like look at the anti-abortion movement, you realize that it's much more about controlling women's bodies and when women have sex and for what reason than it is about,
right,
like, actually reducing the number of abortions. Like, they don't really care that much about that. It's they're much more just control freaks, and I think that that's kind of the case that's being made here,
right? And by intentionally not giving him that backstory, that's what they're trying to do to this character.
Maybe I just don't think that it I don't think he's brought to heel enough to, like, to really illuminate that.
Yeah. So later on, Bashir and Worf and Dax are kind of debating the speech's quote-unquote merits.
Yeah, and this is, like, exactly what Worf was afraid of, right?
Yeah.
Like, now on this couple's vacation where you said you weren't going to bother us, we're having group dinners.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but it's a buffet, so, like, what are you going to do? They only occur during a certain number of hours. And as soon as Leeta arrives, Worf just gets immediately pissed.
Yeah. He's seen Julian with another lady. He's seen Leeta with another gentleman. He's pissed. And he, like, starts throwing his napkin around.
Something wrong?
And I like when Bashir asks Dax, like, what's going on? And she just gives him a little look, like, it's nothing, it's nothing. but then Worf boils over.
You two dishonor each other with your actions.
They explain, oh yeah, we're actually here breaking up. It's like instead of a sad funeral, it's a celebration of life, but for our relationship.
What a great way to put it. It's awesome. The rite of separation. It's like it turns a couple into co-wingmen, I think.
Yeah.
Like, because they're on the prowl for each other while they're on Risa.
They've both knocked boots with some other people, and then, like, they leave this dinner to go knock boots with each other. Like, hey, yeah, let's maybe have a little parting roll in the hay.
Seems pretty healthy to me.
I'm into it.
But just then, a fight breaks out across the dining room. They hear the customary breaking of glasses and plates, the sound of a table being flipped over.
And they're like, is Ben Harrison a busboy in this restaurant?
That sounded like a bong breaking near a jacuzzi.
I broke a lot of glassware when I was a busboy.
It's a fundamentalist attack, Ben, because that's what fundamentalists do when they can't suppress a thing they don't agree with.
Yep. Fullerton has escalated from guy who makes stump speeches to guy who carries out attacks. And he and his homies have rifles, which they're not using, but once everything kind of settles down, Worf and Dax realize that these rifles are in fact not armed.
Ricean security doesn't kill them because they're white.
Well, there's that Bolian with them.
Yeah, that's true. The Bolian gets killed. This whole, if I can't have a good time, no one else can either mentality is really irritating. And I think it's the thing that makes Fullerton one of my least liked characters in all of Star Trek. He is just stridently like that.
I don't think you're supposed to like him.
No, but I mean, I hate him more than I hate hateable people in Star Trek. He is like right up there.
Wow.
He's just the worst.
Yeah, he's a dirtbag. And they're like, Dax says like, oh yeah, like we could arrest you as Starfleet officers right now.
Part of it is the smirking, right? Because yeah. He does this shitty thing and then Dax says we could arrest you and he smirks right at her face like, what are you going to do? Ricean security is shit. They're busy fucking.
They're not going to prosecute. They'll just release me after 24 hours.
Yeah.
Maybe just arrest him anyways then.
Yeah. Fullerton clearly needs a good fuck because he is just a little bit of a busybody.
I know how you all feel when that furry temptress seems like she's calling your name.
Yeah, this is a guy that is putting out his Horgon and nobody is offering him Jemaah Harone.
It feels like he has a very similar worldview to the one that Admiral Layton had in Paradise Lost. And if you were to swap Risa for Earth and Layton for Fullerton, I think there are a lot of similarities here.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a stripe of thinking.
Yeah.
I just don't happen to agree with it.
No.
What are you doing now?
That night, Worf and Dax finally have that conversation that they've been foreshadowing the entire episode, and
Worf has said the phrase, we have much to speak about, more times than he said anything else in this episode.
That's Klingon for we need to talk.
About us.
And that is usually followed by a tough conversation.
Yeah.
It's a conversation here where they realize that neither of them is going to change.
It's easy to understand where Dax is coming from because she's a little bit like more adjusted to the kind of society that we're used to, but it does kind of make you realize that Worf feels really on the ropes here because he comes out of this tradition where you mate once and forever,
right?
Like once somebody is your Parmakai, that's it. And the idea that they're not married and they're not acting married and they're not doing anything to kind of like make this as serious as it feels for him is really hard for him to cope with.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they both kind of go to bed angry, and you can't do that, Ben. You just can't.
No. It's not allowed. You're not allowed to leave your wedding reception before you agree to those terms.
Yeah. Yeah, so in the morning, Dax wakes up and finds Arandis cleaning up the mess that the fundamentalists made. I guess they just left it during the night. Like, I'm a person, like, I want to clean up all the dishes before going to bed.
Yeah.
But they just left it out.
This was a go home tonight, guys. We'll fix this in the morning.
Yeah. But Arandis and Dax are close, and she can tell something's up with her and Worf. It doesn't take much to see that.
I've had better vacations.
Better than Risa?
Yeah, Arandis is going to help Dax feel much better by taking her to a pottery class where she teaches her how to make a clay mournhammer.
Now, leave room for the batteries, Dax. I thought this thing looked like a mop dog. Do they have Commodores on Risa? Kind of looked that way to me.
Yeah. I guess I jumped ahead because we do get to see the breaking up ceremony that Leeta and Bashir have. Bajorans break up sort of the same way that Jews get married.
Yeah.
By breaking something.
Yeah.
The time for sharing is over.
That's fun. Yeah, they both drink out of the same bowl and they chuck the bowl on the ground. That's it. It's over.
Yeah.
And Quark is shocked, like we all are, about how easy it is to break up with someone. He's expecting a lot more drama.
No recriminations, no hurt feelings.
And a dab of drama does come, which is that, like, right on the heels of breaking up with Bashir, Lita's like, oh, yeah, it's like mainly my reason for breaking up is that I've had my eye on another fella for a few months now. And drops the bomb that Bashir got dumped for Rom.
He's so cute and very sexy.
Their reactions to this are really fun to me because Quark is disgusted because it's his brother.
Right.
And Bashir is low-key disgusted because of how it reflects on him.
Right. I'm less attractive than Rom is the conclusion that you get to.
And it's definitely injected with that whole, like, if she left me for him,
yeah,
what does that mean about me?
Yeah.
Like, it's a vanity thing, which is a great Bashir quality, right? Like, what do you know about Bashir?
Vain.
Vain. And urine, but mostly vain.
So, upon catching Dax making a model of Morn's dong with her friend, Worf storms off and basically joins the radical political group.
Why does Risa rent these guys a room? These guys are rabble-rousing, and they shouldn't be allowed to be there, I think.
Well, it's a free country.
I guess. I mean, do we know that about Risa? I guess we can assume it based on what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where there's a little bit of hand-waving, but Risa is part of the Federation.
Yeah.
Is it like the EU where it's like a bunch of sovereign planets that are all under, you know, some of the same laws, but some different ones?
Yeah, it seems that way.
I don't know.
So Worf finds his way to the conference room that the fundamentalists are having their meeting in, like Neptune 2. And offers his services.
Yeah.
He's like, how can I help?
I have a way to really shut the fun down on this planet. I'm having no fun. And so on a planetary scale, I think that we should make everybody else feel the same way I do.
I, at this point, was really feeling like Worf would lose me forever. Extremely down on Worf at this moment in time.
Yeah. A lot of discussion of, like, fun outings that might happen on Risa that have gotten cut short because of shit to do with Worf. The first time they were talking about going and checking out a waterfall or something, and he wanted to go to the political rally. And this time, Worf is gone, and Quark, Bashir, and Dax are talking to Arandis about maybe getting out there and doing something when lightning strikes and the clouds open up. And, you know, Risa, which has been described as naturally being kind of a swamp planet with a lot of geological activity, reverts to its rainforesty, swampy ways.
Yeah, that didn't take long.
Worf has the universal remote that turns the weather on.
You know, man's supposition is that any remote control you find in a hotel or a resort has been up someone's butt. So don't smell the weather controller, Worf.
I'm sorry, whose supposition?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember.
So the deal is it's going to be rainy for the next 3 or 4 days. And this is great because Fullerton thinks like, oh, we'll force everybody to get back to, you know, back to essentials. Like they can hack it on Risa while it's rainy and unpleasant out, then they'll see like what it takes to be a capable citizen in a dangerous galaxy.
Because Risa is an illusion.
Worf really crosses the vacation Rubicon here, because while Fullerton takes responsibility for the plan, Worf admits being the one that actually turned off the weather system.
Yeah.
If you're vacationing with Worf and he's admitted this, like, he's dead to you. He's ruined your vacation, and he's intentionally done it.
Right. Like, this is a future in which resources are unlimited. So the only thing that is limited is time. And
vacation
he's just
time.
Wasted a bunch of your fucking vacation time.
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard to see this as not being anything other than a crime.
Yeah.
That he's committed on a planetary scale. And it's never discussed that, like, Worf would ever be in trouble for what he's done.
Which he should be.
He should be in really big trouble.
Yep. He should be in Rycian prison, which can't be that bad, right?
Yeah.
You got to make a toilet Horgon out of your feces. And it sends a message, all right.
He's available for something.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
So yeah, like everybody's bummed out. Just a check-in on runtime here. There's about 10 minutes left in the episode when this happens.
Right.
And 2 minutes of that is taken up with a little scene of like Dax playing 3D Moncala with herself while Quark complains that it's rainier than Ferenginar. And then the rest of that 10 minutes is a big fight between Dax and Worf where they get to the bottom of things. What is eating him to the extent that he committed a crime on a planetary scale?
He's committing crimes on a relationship scale too, Ben.
Yeah. These should be relationship extinction level events. But Dax starts talking to him and she's like, like Curzon knows a lot more about Klingons than you do. Curzon spent more time with them.
Yeah.
And one thing about them is that like while they have a lot of honor and warrior shit going on like you, they are also bon vivants. They live life to the fullest. They have zest and passion. And you ain't got shit.
Yeah, so where is the other half? This missing half? And Worf sits her down and tells her the story of his upbringing. And he tells her the most bug-nut story of a soccer game he played when he was a kid. Where he was going in for a header. And at the same time, he simultaneously headed in the winning goal for his team and broke the neck of one of the other players.
He died the next day.
And from that point forward, he became a stoic. He suppressed all of the bon vivant aspects of being a Klingon so that he could keep the people around him safe.
His idea was that if he lived like to the full extent of the physicality that he has, that he would just mangle all the humans around him.
I mean, the logic is flawed utterly because, like, by withholding the Klingon fun part of himself, he's just leaning more into the fundamentalist Klingon part of himself, which is no less dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, he's getting into Batleth fights all the time.
It's bad logic, but it's kid logic, I think.
Yeah.
Critically.
Right.
And he doesn't seem that remorseful that he let this all get so out of hand?
No, he does that thing where he allows his story to explain his actions without apology.
Yeah, like instead of an apology, like the earth starts to shake and they have to go like grab the weather control tricorder from Fullerton because I think he's gone too far. But it's like, Worf, like you put that power in his hands. Like 100% of this is happening because of you.
Right. And so to
Fullerton's give, like a powerless asshole until you gave him that gadget.
To give Worf the hero turn of picking him up by the neck and throwing him into a banquet table.
Yeah.
Doesn't really forgive anything that led them up to that point.
And this is like a 45-minute episode. They walk into the Neptune 2 conference room, grab the gadget away from Fullerton, and it's like day saved. It's all over. Nothing to see here.
I am on vacation.
I feel like they were just looking at the stunt as the catharsis.
Right. Yeah, just tossing this guy across the room is as far as we need to go in explaining what happens at the end of this.
But you know how it is when you're on vacation. At least when I'm on vacation, I am a little bit counting the days in a way that I try not to. But when the button on the episode happens and everyone's walking on the beach on what is supposedly the last day, there is no mention of their entire vacation being ruined by Worf. They're just kicking sand and enjoying each other's company. But I've got to believe that there would be real hard feelings here. with the scarcity of vacation time resources and with how much of a dick Worf was, and with, I mean, Arandis is there. A bunch of her compound has been ruined by earthquakes and rain.
Right.
Because of Worf.
Right. Dax is still in Worf's arms.
It's hard to judge Star Trek episodes harshly for their lack of consequences. To a certain extent, you forgive them when there are not long story arcs, but we are watching a show right now that is embracing the arcs that it's able to give us. And punishments on occasion are lasting on this show, but that they totally excuse and ignore what Worf has done here is insane to me.
Well, I think that's a good opportunity for me to ask you, did you like this episode?
I think episodes that make me feel strongly tend to be good. Like, that's a good thing, right? That I'm so upset at Worf, that I'm so incredulous with why Dax would stay with him.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many holes in this story, and it's so toothless for so long that to give us a bad guy who is proselytizing his morality and then giving us, like, his whole deal is sort of like punishing the society that he doesn't agree with.
Right.
And then to not punish the true bad guy of the episode in Worf is just confusing and wrong. There's so much of an equivalency between Fullerton and Worf. And because nothing ever happens to either of them by the end, it really leaves me with a feeling of what was it all for. You could see what they were trying to do in setting up this morality play, but it didn't. There was no lesson from it.
Yeah. I think that the other problem is that it never repudiates what Fullerton was saying.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that there is a valid repudiation. But the fact that Fullerton gets all of the airtime to say why what he thinks is right, like, it doesn't have the power of like a Cal Hudson, where you have a genuine difference of opinion that you can see the validity of both sides.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you wind up hating Cal Hudson because of his methods, but you could see where he's coming from.
Yeah, and you just don't get that with Fullerton. That's a great point. I think another thing that really cripples the episode is just the constraints you have in showing sexuality on television at this moment in time and on syndicated television, because by making Risa tame, it makes Fullerton's protestations feel absurd. And right. And also Worf's agreeing with that absurd.
Right. It's like telling people that they're ungodly for going to Disneyland or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that hurts.
Like, whoa, we just like Dole Whip. Leave us alone.
Yeah. Just give me that Dole Whip. It's good.
I've never had it.
Oh, it's really good, Ben. It is as good as they say.
Yeah, but I don't want to go to a children's theme park to get it.
I don't think you have to. I think there are places in LA that sell it.
Oh, let's go find it next time you're down here.
All right. That's a deal. Hey, let's go find some Priority One messages.
That's a deal.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature. Message goes like this. Do you remember Mystery Science Theater 3000? Well, the soulmates do join two couples as they explore Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Cool.
Craft some custom cocktails, debate the best episode riffs, and discuss love and their love for Mystery Science Theater 3000. Soulmates podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, or wherever you get your podcasts, or come join them on their website. That website is www.arcanejugs.com. Arcane is spelled like arcane, but Jugs is spelled JUGGZZ.com.
All right.
And they've got a subreddit too. That's r/arcanejugs. 2 G's, 2 Z's on Arcane Jugs. Arcane Jugs, check it out. You know, with a name like Arcane Jugs, I expected this to be some sort of weird steampunk sex site or something, you know? Like you put some brass goggles on a couple of brass breasts. Uh-huh. That's Arcane Jugs, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm just going to give Arcane Jugs that t-shirt idea. There you go.
There you go. Enjoy it, Arcane Jugs. Adam, we have a second priority one message here, and this one is of a personal nature. It is to Ben and Adam, and it's from She Who Does Burlesque.
Wow.
She Who Does Burlesque has been the subject of some like romantic P1 back and forth, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Like there was like a date and then there wasn't a second date.
Maybe She Who Does Burlesque can get some brass tassels from arcanejugs.com.
There you go. Now you're thinking. The message goes...
Synergy, baby.
The message goes like this. My good gentlemen, Ben and Adam, I am officially requesting the return of Angry French Guy to regular impression status. I wasn't finished laughing at it. Good day to you.
All right. Okay.
You know, I think She Who Does Burlesque makes a good point. There was, in this very episode, an opportunity to say, Wolf is a war criminal! He shut down the weather system for the entire planet! And he never faced punishment. Why is there no due process on Risa? Oh, for what reason he get to return to his job like he an okay person? He's a piece of shit. I'm sure my neighbor is just like, God, I hate living next to this idiot.
Your neighbor, creator of a great earthquake podcast, hoping for the earthquake to come. Well, we constantly hope for more Priority One messages to come. If you would like to be on the giving end of them, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, both of which are a great way to help with the ongoing production of The Greatest Generation.
They sure are. Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that gold press latch. Am I
right? Yeah. Am I right? I've got to fly cross country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scars for 25% off.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Get that gold press lock. Get that gold press lock. No,
platinum. Gold press lock. That's a lot of yamak sauce. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
Yeah, you know, he isn't in this episode a bunch, and there's a reason for that, but I'm going to give my Shimoda to Dr. Bashir.
Hmm.
He is a fish out of his cultural water.
Yeah.
He is both in a mixed culture relationship, but he's also on a planet on vacation that has its own systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a human guy trying to figure it out, and he throughout is pretty cool and open and down with whatever. You might even say he's a little bit aloof.
Yeah, he doesn't have like a major freak out when he finds out about the ROM thing. Like he's a little upset about it, but he doesn't get like controlling and shitty.
There is an interesting reason for his performance though, and that is I read that the night before his breakup scene with Lita, Nana Visitor gave birth to their child.
Wow.
Like that night. And so he pulled an all-nighter with Nana Visitor during childbirth, drove right to Malibu to film his scene. And he said he actually felt very bad about his performance in this episode because he said he just like wasn't even there for the breakup scene mentally. He was just totally checked out because he was fucked up and sleep deprived. But I think there was a serenity there about him in his detachment that I think really worked for his performance in the ep. So for all those reasons, I'm going to give Bashir my drunk Shimoda. What about you?
I'm going to give it to that enlisted lady that Morn gives the flower to.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't even have a rank, Pip. So she's presumably just a crewman of some kind. But
there's no way that's oldest living ensign.
No.
She's
not even an ensign.
Yeah.
But
maybe oldest living ensign got demoted. She got busted down.
To crewman,
and now she's on DS9.
Wow. Well, the reason she gets my drunk Shimoda is she gets this flower from Morn, and then they kiss and walk off together. And then, you know, Dax comes in, and there's some back and forth, but you see her walk by alone on the promenade like moments later by herself. So, I just like, I loved the story that told. Like, whatever Morn tried, like, I don't know if he was apologizing or proposing a date or what, but it did not go far.
Renee Auberjonois cut out the scene where she's talking to a friend and she's like, he took it out. That's fun.
Yeah. So she's my drunk Shimoda.
Good job by her. Like, good background acting.
Yeah.
Center frame. That's what you want if you're a background actor.
Yeah. She gets a lot of face action.
You
want to
be the
actor.
One in the sequence.
Yeah.
Good job. Well, we need to figure out what episode we're watching next in the sequence, Ben, don't we?
I guess we do, yeah. Next episode is Season 5, Episode 8, Things Past. Sisko, Odo, Dax, and Garrick are mysteriously placed into the roles of a group of condemned Bajorans executed 7 years... ..
Uh-oh. We're getting a lot of ..
Ago.
Oh.
I clicked on it and it gave me the last word there.
Okay. I thought they were, the show was just really leaning into the ellipses for all things.
No, but what it is leaning into, Adam, is the game of buttholes, the will of the prophets, over at gach.biz/game. Do you want to tell us how we're going to be doing the next episode?
We have really been getting our squares handed to us in this game, Ben. Over and over, we've slid down. We are now on square 19. 19 is the square, and I've got a die in my hand.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Looks like a couple squares ahead, we've got a space butthole. A couple squares past that, a banger. So, here we go.
We hit that banger, and that's why we're on 19, right?
Yep. I have rolled a 6.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
We have hopped over that banger, leaving it safely behind us.
Very nice.
And we are currently on square 25.
Okay. I am enthusiastic about a regular old episode for next week's show.
You and me both. Just as I am enthusiastic about thanking all the people who make this show possible.
Oh, yeah.
People like those who go to MaximumFun.org/donate. They are the ones that keep us in business month after month.
You know, if you're supporting this show on MaximumFun.org/donate, you don't just get access to the bonus content from this show, but you get access to the bonus content from all shows on MaximumFun.org. That includes The Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire. There's some great stuff on there.
Yeah, have you ever wanted to hear us talk about Terminator 2?
Have you ever wanted to hear us talk about The Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise time travel war movie? That's on there.
In there. It's all in there.
Yeah.
So check your donor feed if you're contributing to the show. And if you're not already a contributor, what the hell is your problem?
Contribute.
You're freeloading. Stop it with the freeloading.
Cut it out. Gotta thank our boy Bill Tilly, who makes hilarious trading cards about every episode of the show. You can find those on Twitter at BillTilly1973. He's also got a Tumblr, I think, under the same name. That he's putting those up at. And he is a great hang online, as are all of the friends of DeSoto who use the hashtag GreatestGen or our Facebook groups, subreddits, etc. to come together and be awesome.
All the great music you hear on the show is made possible by Adam Ragusea and his musical talent, chopping and screwing the work of Dark Materia, of course, our music daddy, the OG music man, who made Greatest Gen music possible.
Check out Adam Ragusea's cooking channel on YouTube.
Yeah, you're really missing out if you're not watching those and cooking along with him. They're great.
Teach you how to make some enchiladas or something.
Does he have an enchilada recipe?
Yeah, it's a new one.
Wow. That sounds great. You know what? I'm a recently reformed cheeseman.
Yeah.
And I'm back on my cheese business.
Time to hit those enchiladas.
That's what I'm saying. I think I'll make those this weekend. That sounds good. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. That is another terrifying trip in a runabout.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.